how are you looking at my shirt today? Those of you who are guests, you're like, what is that guy up there in that goofy hat wearing that weird shirt with the guy on the tractor? Well, we're doing a series at the close of Ecclesiastes. We've called it Harvest. And we're talking about the fact that life is very much like, farmers who plant and harvest. What you plant in your life in the spring is what grows and takes root and develops into fruit or into grain in the fall. And, at the harvest, that's not the time to go, oh gosh, I need to plant the right thing. We grow whatever we invest into our lives. And the last couple chapters of Ecclesiastes, this has kind of been Solomon's theme of, just the reality that the things that we put into our life while we're young will take root and grow as we get older. And old age is a hard thing. We found that out last week. We're kind of closing the series this morning, and our topic, our title this morning is trucking. I'll never forget, I thought trucks were cool until I actually got in the one that my father-in-law and my brother-in-law use, and then I was like, all right, this is a man's world right here. I mean, you get up in that thing. Now, I could never drive it. I mean, because you had to know how to drive air brakes and, all this stuff. But just sitting in the passenger cab, you just be yourself. You felt manly as the sound of diesel engine. Let's be honest. I mean, everything I've ever driven, even I'm a truck guy. Like, I've always driven some kind of a truck. And yes, I count my Dodge SUV as a truck. But there is something about the sound of a diesel engine. The hum, it just got a different feel to it that just makes you feel like I am man. I can do anything. And then you get in one of these big old honking trucks, and the one they had, you could crawl in the back and take a nap. It was nicer than some of the bedrooms and houses I lived in. Had this big old bed, this TV sitting up there, a whole stereo system. And, my father-in-law or brother-in-law would pull down to where they would send their grain, and they'd get there, 4 or 5 hours before it opened and just crash out in the back of the thing. That is cool. Okay, let's be honest. That is just an awesome thing, trucking. And the whole idea here is that at the end of the harvest season, they fill their grain bins with their harvest. But then you get out there and they got this big old giant thing called an auger that, takes the grain from these huge grain bins or these big round metal buildings you see on farms, for those of you who are like total city people and you don't know what I'm talking about. These huge grain bins, and they dump the grain into the trucks, and then the trucks take it to market, and it is the truck that gets it from the harvest to being useful in the world. They will dump it, a lot of the grain, the places that take their grain are right along rivers. They will put them on barges, all kinds of stuff. But they put it in these trucks and they drive. And when I was hanging out with people, hanging out with my brother-in-law, and a couple times I actually ran with him down to East St. Louis to dump the grain, to take it to market, I found out a couple things. First of all, I found out there is a proper way to wear a hat. If you've not noticed the right way to wear a hat, if you're in a country, you got to have this certain curve on it, where it comes down and it's got this nice, neat little curve where it kind of like just hangs off both eyebrows and a big old giant crown on it. And that's just the way you wear a hat. And there's a certain way you got to wave. Now, listen, a lot of you are suburbanites. This was my life. And I'd be rolling through the country, driving my Ford truck, thinking I'm cool. And I would wave to somebody like this. My wife smacked me one day. I said, cut that out. And I'm like, what? There is a way that you wave if you are a cool farm dude, redneck country guy. And it's like this, okay? You're driving in the country in your truck. Hopefully it's a diesel. I never was that blessed. I always had like a 6-cylinder Ford, but it is what it is. So you're driving and you got your hand on the steering wheel and you drive with one hand, left hand on the steering wheel, kick back with your cap curled a certain way, and something in your mouth. Now, the options are cigarette, skull, and if you're just not going to do one of those two things, then you get yourself a toothpick or a piece of a straw, and it's there. But something is hanging out of your mouth there so everybody can see you walk drive by. And as you drive by, you got this thing, and the wave is like this, okay? It's two fingers with your thumb up straight ahead. So here it is. This is the official, if you're a trucker guy, wave. All right, so everybody practice that, because we live in Eureka and there's this clash of cultures, and you suburbanites, okay, when you're driving down a highway and you wave like this at somebody, all the Eureka local people are going, there is a city person, and they are the problem. Okay, and so if you learn how to wave, it'll fix a lot of that, all right? You get your hat like this, curve it by the, this is my AGCO preventative service. This is, you know, where they took their tractors and trucks to make sure that they were working right and all that kind of stuff. Get your hat like this and drive down. And see, here's the problem though. It doesn't work in a minivan. I tried this the other day. I forgot where I was. I was driving and I did this in a minivan, and the dude driving a big old truck with the tires looked at me and was like, seriously, dude, give that up. But anyway, let's try it together, okay? You're driving, you got to get this wave just right, all right? It's two fingers and a thumb straight up, and you just kind of point. And it's real quick, boom, and then you're done. All right, that's the official trucker redneck wave, all right? So now you fit in Eureka very well, and that ought to be something that you practice, get good at it. There's a certain way, you know, watch guys do it. You'll feel better about yourself at the end of the day. I have found that the redneck in my wife has come out. She grew up on a farm. I get these shirts. Nick's been buying these for me, and I got now four tractor shirts. And when she shows up and she sees me in them, she keeps flirting with me in these shirts. And so I am going to keep these shirts. Trucking. It is, you know, trucking is how a farmer gets his crop to market. It is how it's useful. Without the truck, it will just sit in a grain bin. And no matter how good the harvest has been, if you can't get it from your grain bins to a grain, you know, factory, a place that will take your grain, the problem is that there's no use in it. You will have barns full of stuff that can't be used. And here's the challenge this morning for us. It is this. Even if the harvest of our life has been good, if we don't figure out how to get it out into the lives of other people where it's useful, it's not complete. What we've really been trying to challenge you with, in fact, the whole book of Ecclesiastes has been a challenge to say, live for one thing, live for Jesus. That's the only thing that matters. The rest of the stuff in this world, even our families, are good things, but they are not God things. And our problem is that we take good things and make them God things. And so we take drink and food and pleasure and money and possessions and power and politics and religion and family. Those can all be good things. They're lousy, terrible God things. And our tendency is to take good things, make them God things. And Solomon has told us all through this book, doesn't work. Live with a single passion in life to honor your creator. That was the message from last week where he just says, listen, remember your creator in the days of your youth, before those horrible days when you get old come. Do that. Remember your creator. Live for the one who made you and for the purposes that you were created for. Live to honor God. Live for his glory. And if we do that, we will invest in our lives certain things that will come to fruit, that will grow and become a crop in our lives, and there will be a harvest of good things. But here's the deal. No matter what the harvest is, God's desire is to use that to impact people around you, impact the world, to make a difference in people's lives. And as we study out of Ecclesiastes this morning, the very last passage, we've spent, I count them up, 23 messages in Ecclesiastes. Some of you have been in the church, this is all you've known. You haven't been here long enough to know anything else but Ecclesiastes. It's all we've studied while you've been here. And I'll explain a little later why we do that. But, you know, we're at the end of this book, and what Solomon's going to do is he is going to stick the landing. I mean, this is the last thing, and boom, he's going to nail it. He's going to stick the landing. He's really going to... It's going to nail down what this book was about, the whole purpose of writing it, where he was going, and how it should influence our lives. But this is what I want us to see here, that Solomon is going to show us that his life was a story. The story did not go in the right way, but that doesn't mean that it can't be useful in the lives of others. It has been useful in our lives. Solomon's harvest, while not a harvest of good things and righteousness, while not a harvest of joy, he got it in the truck. And he allowed his harvest, his life, to influence even us for the last 23 weeks. And his repentance, his return to God, even after a lifetime of living for nothing but pleasure and for himself, his return to God has impacted millions around the world as they wrestle with the same philosophical and life issues that Solomon has wrestled with. And this is us, okay? I want you to kind of step into Solomon's shoes, and I want us to see this morning how Solomon's life becomes, even though his harvest wasn't perfect, it becomes a thing of beauty as God uses it to impact others, and this is exactly what God wants to do with your life, all right? And so we're in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. We'll be reading the last few verses, and like I said, this will be the last message in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to take one of those. Read that along with us. Pass those if you're, you know, in one of the toward the end. Pass those down. I think we actually need to pass a few back. If the back few rows, we may not have got them far enough back. So if you got some around you, just flip them back behind you if people are back there. I forgot to write down what page. What page are we on in that Bible? 475. Turn to page 475 in that Bible. And we're going to be talking about the ways God intends to get the harvest of your life in the lives of others. And what Solomon does, he points out some things that are for him and for us as we look at this. Any Back to the Future fans? Love those movies, okay? Back to the Future. If you haven't seen them, just play along with me. In the story, this young teenage guy named Marty and this old dude named Doc end up with this relationship, and he builds a time machine out of a DeLorean. I was driving around about 2 weeks ago here in Eureka, and somebody pulled up next to me in a DeLorean. I was like, wow, there you go. I haven't seen one of those in ages. But built a time machine out of DeLorean, and they go from 1985 back to 1955, but right before they go back, Doc gets murdered. At least that's what the story leads you to believe. So now they're back in 19, or actually Marty goes back to 1955 and he finds Doc 1955 version. So he just left Doc 1985 version getting shot. He goes back to Doc 1955 version and he finds him, and Doc helps him get the DeLorean in shape so he can go back to the future. But all the way through, Marty has this knowledge that on the night that he leaves on this time, that Doc is going to get shot and murdered. And he lives with this deep passion that I must let this guy who has mattered in my life know what's going to happen. He needs to be prepared. He needs to know what's going to take place. It is of urgent, imperative issue for him. And so as the movie goes on, Marty keeps saying, Doc, I got to tell you. And Doc's response is, I don't want to know about the future. It's dangerous. We can mess up the whole space-time continuum if I know too much about the future. And he says, but I have to tell you. And in the movie, several times, Marty tries to find ways to communicate to Doc what's going to take place on that night, because he knows if he doesn't, when he gets back to the future in 1985, Doc is going to get killed and it's all going to be over. And he's got this passion and urgency to let him know. He tries to talk to him a couple times. Doc won't hear of it. He tries to catch him by surprise one time and tell him, and a thunderstorm hits. And then he even tries to slip him a letter, which Doc, in the movie, throws away. And Marty is crushed with the fact that he was never able to communicate this message, knowing what's going to happen when he shows up. Now, you have to see the movie to figure out how it comes out. But here's what I wanted to use to talk to you about this morning in this. That the urgency that Marty had really ought to be the urgency we have. That we're around people every day that really are living in a place where they don't know God, they have not connected with God, they are struggling in life, their lives are broken, and the outcome of Ecclesiastes is going to be the outcome of their lives. And if we don't figure out how to take our spirituality from just this private thing where we are just kind of around a group of people hanging out to a public thing where we figure out how the harvest of our lives gets into the lives of others. If we don't figure that out and don't have a passion for that, those people are hopeless because they are far from God. And we need to be people, as you are growing in your faith, wherever you are in the journey, and you may be just trying to figure faith out this morning. I think this message will speak to you as somebody who's just looking into the faith, trying to figure out it, and hopefully you can have some people come around you that the harvest of their lives can be invested into your life to help you figure it out. And there are people around us everywhere we go that this is where they're at. And the call of the gospel, the call of the good news is that if I have been changed by Christ, I have a harvest in my life, but I need to figure out what the trucks look like. I need to figure out how to get that harvest out of just Sunday morning and maybe a community group and figure out what it means to live as somebody who's on mission with God, living my life to honor him, but also that people see that. What Solomon's going to do is he's going to help us see a few ways that in his life, especially through this book, that has taken place. We're going to be challenged by this. So there's three things. The first of this is the first way that God intends to get the harvest of your life and the lives of others is through your story, through your story. Now, look at chapter 12, verses 9 and 10. He says, besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. Now, he kind of breaks into this third person thing, talking about himself in third person, calling himself the preacher. But the thing you need to understand is that this is also how the book of Ecclesiastes started. The Hebrew, the Bible's Old Testament was originally written in the language of Hebrew, and in the Hebrew, the term that is used here is actually the title of the book. So if you were to read the Hebrew version, it would just be titled The Preacher. And Solomon uses this to kind of bookend the entire book to say, listen, I have a message. I need to teach and proclaim a message to you. I need to let you know the great things of life and deal philosophically, but also practically with the pitfalls. And so he gives himself the self-designation of a preacher. I have a message I need to get across to you. And he says, the preacher here, who he says, besides being wise, we'll talk about that in just a minute, he taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. Now, here's what he's basically getting at. How did he get wise? And this is not wisdom from sitting in a university being book smart. This is wisdom that comes from life experience. And what he's saying is, my life is a story. I have this life experience, and now as an old dude, I get it. I thought I was smart and I got it when I was young, but I didn't really get it. And now as an old preacher, as an old person with a message, the message comes out of my life. And the book of Ecclesiastes is that message. And this is what he's saying. He said, I've organized and arranged and ordered the events of my life in such a way that you could see clearly that there's only one way to live. My story is the platform for this book. And it's come from the combination of my experiences, the brokenness that I have, and I have arranged these in such a way that you can see these. Verse 10, the preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. Now, hold on. The preacher sought to find words of delight. Those of you who have been here the whole time ought to see the irony of this. Words of delight, Ecclesiastes. Some of you are like, I am in counseling now because I've been coming to this church with the book of Ecclesiastes. I've pulled out my old AC/DC records and I'm wearing black. I have this dark side of me now that was never there before I started coming to this church. I have no idea what he's talking about, words of delight, you know. And, you know, it's kind of funny that he says this, you know, because if we've just read through this book, it doesn't feel like words of delight. But what Solomon's actually has been telling us the whole time is that God has created us for joy, that we should enjoy life, that if I pursue anything under the sun, I won't find that joy. But when I find my joy and my happiness and my honor and my the glory of God as the central thing, and I turn to the glory of God for these things, that all of a sudden they become words of delight. And what Solomon is really getting at is, yeah, I've had hard words. Heard a preacher this week preaching out of this passage say, hard words make soft people and soft words make hard people. And a church that is not willing to stand up and say the hard things of the Bible is gonna produce a bunch of soft Christians who don't really stand and believe in anything and whose lives are not being changed. Sometimes the Bible is hard. We need the hard words, though, because those hard words pull us and push us and make us like Jesus. And this is what he's saying. He's saying, listen, I know it's been hard, but in the end, if you've heard what I've said, you will find it to be a delight. You will find it to be a delight. And here's the whole gist of what he's getting at here. My life story is not the good one. And I've told you the hard things from my life. This is Solomon. I've told you the hard things from my life. And hopefully that is trucked into your life now. And here's the deal. Here's what I want you to understand. Our story preaches. Your story can communicate in the lives of people. You may be here and your story may be like Solomon's, going something like this. Man, my life is totally jacked. I am totally messed up. I have tried everything to find happiness. I have been in relationships. I have done drugs. I have drank more than I want to say. I have been in all these other issues, and I've pursued everything thinking it will work. I've tried, you know, every type of, you know, weird meditation kind of mantra thing. I've been in all these cults, whatever it is. You've got all these issues that have been your pursuit of pleasure and happiness, and your conclusion is, I'm here today because I'm going to be real honest, it's not working. And that's Solomon. That is his story, and that may be your story. You may connect with that. Another guy in the Bible is a guy named Paul, and his story is totally different. His story goes like this. I was the good guy. I kept religious rules down to the T. I knew the Bible backwards and forwards. In fact, Paul would say I was part of a sect of Jewish believers or Jewish people. I had memorized the first five books of the Bible. He had memorized Leviticus, seriously. Most of us are like, I'm going to read through the Bible, but I am skipping Leviticus, okay? I get to that book, I'm just like, you know, one day it's like, all right, I read that, I'm done. Woo, you know, he had memorized it. In Philippians, he tells us that I kept the law, the Jewish law and the rituals down to the letter. Paul's story was, I tried to find my value, my meaning, my hope, my purpose, my self-salvation through being a good religious person. And some of you in here, that's your story. You're like, you know, my background is this. I grew up in church. My mom and dad got me there. I did all the stuff that my church said, whether it's a church that is sacramental, where it's like, you know, I did First Communion. I did all the sacraments. I went to confession. Or it's a church that's more like the tradition I did, where you're like, you know, I was in church every week. I went to Awana's. I went to a Bible club. I memorized all the verses. I prayed the prayer. I got dunked, all that kind of stuff. But what happens is we begin to say, this is my story, and all of a sudden I'm pursuing religious goodness. I'm the good guy. Solomon's the bad guy. Paul's the good guy. And I begin to realize that that doesn't work either. I do not find joy and happiness by keeping the rules of being a religious person. And both sets of people need grace. And our story somewhere, and yours may be a combination of those two things, that, you know, you were here for a while, and then you were part of this for a while. Man, you've tried to integrate it all. And you're here this morning, and your story goes like this. It didn't work. I didn't find happiness in those things. I didn't find joy. And if that's where our story ends, that's sad. But all of us, somewhere in our story, there is a path, a journey that we were on that was our own approach to self-salvation, our own approach to trying to find happiness and joy, to get the pleasure of God into my life. And I had some path that may have been the pursuit of pleasure, it may have been the pursuit of religion, but that was our path. And somewhere in our story, there was an intersection where the story of God intersected with our story. Now, if you're here this morning and this is not part of your story, the challenge is to hear this. This is what you need. You need the story of God to intersect with your story and save you out of either religion or the pursuit of pleasure, and to save you for himself. But our story intersected with God, where all of a sudden we saw the cross and the coming of Jesus and the good news that God saves people. And something happened in our hearts. Something happens on the inside. The Bible in John chapter 6, verse 44 tells us that what was taking place was that God was drawing you. He was pulling you towards himself, not because of you, not because of any good thing that you did, but just God chose to speak into your life and begin to pull you to himself. And the story of God intersected with my story. In a very real way, this happened for me when I was very young. I was 7 years old, and the story of God intersected with my story. And I trusted Christ. I repented of my sin, and I trusted Jesus, but not because of me. God pulled me to himself, and his story intersected with my story, and it makes all the difference. And hopefully that's you. You could say, listen, I know that the story of God intersected with my story. Maybe you're in the middle of that right now. Maybe you're hanging out at Genesis and you're like, I'm right in the middle of figuring out what that looks like. And that's great. But this is the story. Even though it's different for all of us, this is the common thing that Christ stepped into my life, drew me to himself, and now that's part of my story. And so because of that, what happens is that there is gradual, consistent, over a period of a life change, because I now live the gospel. I live for the glory of the one who called me and pulled me to himself, and that my story is changing on a daily basis. And all of a sudden, life is full of this joy and happiness. And you hear things like when Paul and Romans say, listen, we rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance produces hope, and hope doesn't disappoint because God has poured his love into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who he's given us. All of a sudden, words like that start become part of your vocabulary. How's life? It's horrible, but I praise Jesus every day. And people look at you like, seriously, what is wrong with you? You got to be cursing God. I can't. He's changed my life. And what Solomon has done here, these two verses, what he is saying to us is my story intersected with God's story. I did have it when I was young, and I walked away from it, and my life was a mess, and it was full of brokenness, and it was vain. Vanity, that's his favorite word. But God's story intersected with mine again. And what I've done is I have told you my story. I've ordered it carefully. And as you interact with it, you will find desire if you find the same conclusion I do. And see, this is what I'm saying to you. Wherever you're at in this, if you're new to the faith and this whole deal of God's story intersecting with yours is new, you have a story. If you've been a follower of Jesus for a long time, I was 7, you have a story. This is one of the great ways that God has given us to get the harvest of our life into the lives of people. Start telling your story. Interact with people. Share with them what God's doing. You don't have to be a religious weirdo, okay, and be all like, all right, I'm going to meet you, and I'm going to have a Bible this big, and we're going to meet it. You know, we're going to meet down here at Solid Rock Coffee House because that's the Christian place to go. And good place. Don't get me wrong. I dig Solid Rock, but, you know, and I'm going to get you in a place where it's like all weird people. And that's how we feel sometimes. And sometimes just being a person who shares little bits of your story. Get the harvest of your life into the lives of others. It may be that your story is, I would like Solomon, I'm very old when this happened to me. And the harvest of my life is not good. But God has made it beautiful. But your story is so important. And it is. Solomon's story has been incredibly important to us. We have heard his story. We have learned from his life. Hopefully it has impacted your life. In the same way, your story is very important. Learn how to share it, to talk to people. And here's, you know, very direct application. Here it is, okay? If you've never sat down and thought about it, sit down and think about your story. Write it out. Take out a sheet of paper and say, you know, what was my path? Where, you know, what were what was my process of self-salvation? Was I the religious person? Was I the, live for pleasure? Or was it this really bizarre mix of both? What was it that I thought I would find happiness? Where was it that I thought would make sense? And why didn't that work for me? And then where was it that God's story intersected with my story and I saw Jesus and the cross clearly? And with that, how's my life changing? How is the direction of my life different today because the God's story and my story intersected? Write it out. Think about it. Pray through it. And then start considering ways that you, like Solomon, can do that. I don't know if you're like me, but, you know, we send out a Christmas letter, okay? We do. We're one of those weird families that does that. And we get some of them, and they're like 14 pages long, and we are one of the families that also looks at them and goes, I ain't reading this. Okay, we look at the pictures, and we'll read the bullet points. But, you know, that might be a good way this year, and that might be something that totally freaks you out. Find your own way, but figure out how it is that you can tell your story to people. Just share with them who you are and how your story fits into the story of God and all this kind of stuff. And the second thing he talks about is this. He doesn't just talk about his story being this, but he talks about his growth in the scriptures, or very specifically, your growth in the scriptures. Look at verses 11 and 12. He says, the words of the wise are like goads, and nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings that are given by one shepherd. My son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. He's saying, listen, all right, I've written one book, and there's actually a collection of books, and that collection is, ultimately, he's talking about the scriptures, the Bible. And what he's saying is, you know, I'm one voice, but there's actually a collection of many voices, but those many voices, there's one shepherd. And he's talking about this idea that we would call the inspiration of Scripture. The fact that this book that you hold in your hand this morning is not just some human book where a bunch of people wrote about God. It is God speaking through people. It is a miracle that God spoke perfectly through broken and flawed people to give us exactly what he intended to say. And that in a very, very real way, at the same time, people like Solomon are speaking. But behind every word Solomon says is the voice of God speaking to us. And that one shepherd has spoken into our lives through the scriptures. And he's kind of saying, listen, it's these scriptures, it's this collection of sayings, pulling them together, knowing what God is saying, that begins to impact our lives and move us. And I love the way he says it. He says, listen, these sayings are like goads. All right, you know what a goad is? A goat is a long stick that either has a really pointy end or it has nails in it. And if you're a shepherd and you got a sheep that doesn't want to go, you pop it in the rear end with a goad and send it in the right direction. Hey, has Ecclesiastes felt like, you know, a stick in the butt sometimes for you? That you're like, all right, I really don't want to hear this, especially the stuff about getting old. I do not want this. But all of a sudden you feel like, all right, I'm being moved the right way. This is what I said. We preached all the way through Ecclesiastes, 23 weeks. That's almost half a year, okay? Not quite, but almost half a year in one book of the Bible, verse by verse, line by line, taking, you know, as many words and ideas out of this as we can and just trying to say this is what the text means. And if you come here, this is going to be the steady diet of the preaching because what I have to say really doesn't matter. But the scriptures, that the Bible is God speaking. And if I can help you see what God has said, it will prod you along. It also says it's like nails firmly fixed, meaning it's, you know, here's this board, and now I've got nails. I can anchor things onto that, those nails. It's firmly fixed. And he's saying, listen, this collection of sayings, the scriptures are like goads. They prod us in the right direction when we don't want to go. I don't want to move there. I don't want to live repentance. I don't want to live for the glory of God. But all of a sudden, I'm getting poked and prodded by the Bible to go that way. And I don't have anything firm. I feel like my life is just swirling around in circles and I can't grab hold of anything. Any anchor I think I'm grabbing is sinking faster than I am. All of a sudden there's a nail and I can bite into and hold on to and it won't move. And that nail is the collected sayings, the scriptures. And what happens is as a follower of Jesus, the more I study and know and learn about these, the more they're part of my life. And all of a sudden, I'm living an area of life and, you know, I've trusted Christ, but I'm struggling. I've got this brokenness in my life because while I need to have this point where the story of God intersects with my story, that doesn't mean I'm perfect on that day. It just means I've started a journey. And what takes place is as I'm going there, I hit a snag in a road. I might have a deep life catastrophe. Somebody I love may hurt me and break my heart. I may fall into a season where my own decisions are just full of brokenness. I may experience a season of life where I literally am suffering like I haven't before. And the scriptures are there and they begin to prod and they begin to give me a place of security and I find Christ in them. And all of a sudden that becomes part of the fabric of who I am. And as I talk and I share and I discuss with people, it just starts coming out. And all of a sudden I start talking like the Bible. I mean, not that I'm, like I said, it's not weird. I'm not it all. I mean, Solomon's not trying to say, listen, you need to be one of these weird people that just, you know, you're just quoting Bible verses to everybody. It just becomes that the conversation of your life coupled with your story is that what God has said is important. And just great imagery here about what that's supposed to look like. You know, he talks about it coming from one shepherd. That one shepherd is God. It is an illusion. The Bible talks about God as a shepherd all through the scriptures. When we get to the New Testament, Jesus says, I am the great shepherd of the sheep. And so this imagery is that, yeah, it's a lot of people who've spoken, but God has given us his word, and now it's integrated into life. And so we preach the scriptures. But I also want to encourage you, you need to be reading and interacting with the Bible and letting the Bible speak into your story and to address you. And then all of a sudden, you'll have this situation in life, like I said, and all of a sudden, God will work in your life, and you'll see it, and you'll see it clearly in the Bible. You say, okay, I get what God is saying here. It makes sense. It connects. And that just becomes part of the fabric of who you are, and it becomes the truck. The scriptures become the truck. I begin to just talk about God and the things of God in a very natural way. He says in this, look at this. Verse 12, my son, be aware of anything beyond these. Who's he talking to? His kids. The call in scripture first, dads especially, hear this, is that we are trucking our stuff to our kids. Solomon has made a mess of his life. He is like really afraid that his children are going to follow in the same steps. And the real underlying reason he wrote this book is to take the harvest of his life, which is not good, to get it to his kids so they don't follow the same path. You know, and I would just encourage you that the first place we need to start thinking about this is in our own family. You know, are we reading the Bible? Are we interacting? Are we talking about God and the things of God inside the home? That's what Solomon's getting at, all right? Third thing here is this. Not only with our story, not only with our growth in the scriptures, but the third thing is with our own life. With our own life. You know what? I need to pause here and back up. I got ahead of myself. Look at that. Because I forgot to deal with something that's important in the text. Look at this. Chapter 12, verse 8. He says, my son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books, there is no end. And to much study is a weariness of flesh. Interesting phrase. And the bottom line is this, all right? There are books everywhere. Millions of books. And every person who writes a book thinks they are giving the world the final answer, solving the world's problems and making it all work. And Solomon's not saying don't read books. He's saying make sure that everything you read, you are pulling back to the collected sayings of the one shepherd. Don't follow Maslow. Don't follow Nietzsche. Don't follow the writers of other materials and say, well, I listen to God because I read the Bible, but I also listen to these eight other counselors. Figure out how to read the other stuff and understand it in light of what the Bible is saying about situations, all right? This is how it comes out in life. Move on. With your understanding of the scriptures, with your story, and third, with your life. With your life. Look at the last couple verses. This is where he sticks the landing. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Fear God. Keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. This is a guy talking out of life experience. He's saying, listen, everything we do, eventually God is going to deal with it. We don't think so. We're young, man. It's I'm getting away with everything I do. Nobody even thinks about it. It just seems like life is beautiful and I can just ignore God and live for myself all I want. And he says, listen, it will catch up to you. God is going to judge everything, both things that are done in public, things that are done in secret. And so therefore, the end of the matter is this, fear God, keep his commandments. Now, here's what I want you to understand. What he says here is impossible. Try keeping all the commandments of God. Try figuring out what it looks like every single day to live in the fear of the Lord. And when the Bible talks about fear of the Lord, it does mean that I have this unbelievable reverence and awe of God that I see him clearly. And this is where religion, if you're a religious person, what you've done is you've tried to keep the system. But sometimes religion becomes a great pair of sunglasses that keeps us from ever seeing God. I mean, I keep the list that somebody's given me. I'm okay. And this is what happens. This is hopefully some of your story, that you were living your life and God was part of it. I mean, we're in Eureka. Everybody here is a Christian some way, somehow, okay? If you ask them to check a box, what are you? A large percentage of people living on the streets that you and I live on will say they are a Christian, but they do not fear God. They do not see God and have this unbelievably awe of him. They have not seen him clearly. And what happens is the story of God intersects with our story. And all of a sudden, all the lenses that cover our eyes are taken off, and gradually in our lives, we begin to see God for who he is. We understand that I am way worse than I ever imagined. And at the same time, because of the goodness in the gospel, the goodness of God in the gospel, I am more accepted than I ever could have dreamed. At the same time, I'm worse than I ever imagined. I am more accepted by God than I ever could have dreamed. The gospel is intersected in my life, and I am trusting Jesus. And all of a sudden, my life begins to fear God, keep his commandments. Not because I am trying, just because God's changing my life a little bit at a time. And that's the gospel. If you read these verses and go, okay, here's the whole duty of man. It's a duty, first of all. By gosh, you got to keep the rules. There's a duty. And now I'm going to go out tomorrow morning. I'm going to try to keep all the rules of the Bible. You're going to fail. You cannot do what the Bible asks you to do. You can't do it. But the story of the Bible, God's story is this, that Jesus came and did it for you. And now when you trust him, we'll do this in you. And so the gospel is that I fear God, keep his commands. And it says it's the whole duty of man. But what happens is what used to be duty now is desire. That's the good news of Jesus. That what used to be things that I go, I can't do that, and it's a duty to try it, now become desire. A guy named John Newton wrote a hymn. He's the guy who wrote this song, Amazing Grace. And another hymn, he wrote this. Our pleasure and our duty, though opposite before, since we have seen his beauty, are joined to part no more. Love that. That all of a sudden, our life is being transformed. Not because I'm trying harder, but because I see God. The lenses have been taken off. His story and my story have intersected. I see God, and I see him clearly, and my life is being changed. And now, part of the trucking of my life is that the people who I hang out with are starting to go, you're more happy than you used to be. Life seems to work better. What's going on? And all of a sudden, my life is this, and this is what Solomon's getting at. Solomon's saying, listen, this is what the whole book of Ecclesiastes has been at. He sticks the landing and says, fear God, keep his commandments. But the whole book's been about joy. Don't separate those. I find God, and all of a sudden, God pulls me to himself, and my life is being transformed into the image of Jesus. And that preaches, and that's real. And so what needs to happen in our lives is that we need people at every stage of this in Genesis all the time. All the time. We need people at every stage of this. We need people who are like, all right, all I know is my story is that it's not working. That's it. I don't know the rest of this. I don't have a clue. We hope there are a lot of people here, and we want Genesis to be a really safe place for those people to explore faith, to interact with God, to start seeing him clearly so they start fearing him. They start having this awe of their creator. And those people need people in their lives around them that their story is fresh and new. And they're like, you know, the story where God's story intersected with my story was like 2 months ago. And we hope to always have a bunch of people in our church that their story is, you know, it's really fresh, it's new. I'm just figuring this thing out. I don't really get it all, but I'm finding it. God's changing my life. This is why we do baptism here. Baptism is really important for our church because it is a chance for those whose story is new to say, God's story, my story, they intersected. God drew me to himself, and now I want to tell my story. Baptism is given, Jesus gave baptism to his church as an image where people who are new in the faith could tell their story. And so there's an image in baptism is somebody, you know, we baptize by immersion. And the reason we do that is because there is a story of somebody saying, here's my old life. I died, my story intersected with God's stories, and now I'm a new person. I'm raising to a new type of life, just like Jesus did. And so if you're here and you're like, you know, my story's kind of new, I would encourage you to consider baptism as a way to tell your story. But those people, if you're kind of new and you're still, you know, you're like, God intersected, but I don't get it all. I still, you know, you talked about Leviticus. I don't even know how to find Leviticus. Great. We're glad. We want our church to have a lot of people who are new and exploring faith, but those people need people who are a little farther advanced and who have grown and are interacting with the gospel and God. And all the way at the top kind of here is the fact that there are leaders in God's church. And those leaders in the Bible are called elders, all right? We're going to close because we're heading towards this time where we're going to honor and install three guys as elders.